Welcome to the Happier End Podcast. I'm Ted Cluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, it's good to be here with you again in studio. And I'm reminded just of kind of how to and far our influence extends. We were talking off the air about just different people, different organizations getting business because of what we do here on the program, which is talking into our computers once a week. So Barnabas, what I would like for you to do, man, not to put you on the spot here, but I want you to get your best kind of promo voice going and do a great legitimate promo for our boys at Resonate Recordings.
A real promo for Resonate. So like the ones I do when people pay us money.
Yeah, the ones you do for like for authors when people pay us money, and in which only Ronnie and I can tell whether you actually like the book because we know you in that way.
That's a good point. Well, as a matter of fact, Resonate, while they don't pay us money, they do take really good care of us every single week because the fine folks over there do all of our editing and mastering. So the way this process looks, a little behind the scenes for listeners, is each of us sit at a relatively inexpensive microphone and talk into it, and it records via the interwebs. Resonate takes those mediocre files.
You just demystified the whole thing.
Well, no, because Resonate mystifies it right back up again by taking those mediocre files and turning it into the magic that hits people's ears. And that's only their doing because we're not all that magical. So they also do various other editing for sermons, for podcasts. We know of at least one podcast who is now working with them because they heard about Resonate through the Happy Rant. So if you are thinking about starting a podcast or you already have one, or if your church is looking to get sermon audio edited and posted online and things like that, they can help with that. Just go to ResonateRecordings.com. Mark and the folks that he works with there do fantastic work. We love working with them. They have never made a mistake on this podcast, as far as I know. And not too many businesses do that high quality of work. We make all sorts of mistakes, and then they clean them up. So props to Resonate. Thanks for their help. Go to ResonateRecordings.com. If you're looking for any sort of audio editing services, they are fantastic.
We don't make mistakes now that we keep a Wikipedia page open at all times.
Good point.
So, remember that guy?
Oh, I got corrected. I got corrected by somebody after our last episode where we were poking fun at T4G because we were talking about Owen Strawn and we referred to him being in Louisville. And the guy said, "Why don't you check Wikipedia? He's in Kansas City now." So
wow, dude,
we forgot to have our page open.
To not know where Owen Strahan is at all times.
I know.
I mean, I feel like I haven't done my due diligence here.
You're not Piper, I feel like you should. I mean, I feel like you're the only guy that gets nailed about mistakes being made. And so we mentioned Owen Strachan, and I just feel like no matter what we say or do, it all comes back to you. I mean, people want to get you down the pipe, so to speak, with mistakes. It's
well,
baffling.
Pun well nice played, cigar. And that's I like the great fact that all three of us pronounced his last name differently as well. We've got Strahan, Strachan, and Strong.
Kind of a postmodern last name. He wants us to interpret.
Look, if you want your last name to be Stran, then I think you should spell it like Stran, right? I mean, can we just say that?
S-T-R-A-N instead of adding C-H's in there.
Is that the actual thing, Stran?
I think so.
It's Stran, yeah.
But let's go with Strachan because it's...
What's Stranny doing out in KC, man? What's there? Is there a Christian
college? He went to Midwestern Seminary, which is... It's basically Southern Seminary West. It's some folks from Southern Seminary went to Midwestern, and they're turning it into a new Southern Baptist Mecca just a few states west.
Dude, good times, man. Good times. Boys, not to move us off of that happy topic of Southern Seminary just kind of taking over the Mid-South and parts west, but I don't know if you guys know this, so if this shocks you, apologies in advance. Prince died last week.
You're kidding.
What?
Yeah. I don't know if you heard or saw anything about that, but I did. And I say that only to introduce this topic of the furor and kind of the public, you know, outcry, the fervor over these celebrity deaths.
Not to be confused with like mein Fuhrer. That would be they're not at all related.
You know, that was another celebrity death, albeit one that took place a long, long time ago.
And so, one about which fewer people were upset, I would imagine.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, public opinion on that one was pretty well Solid. So what did you guys think not only of Prince's death, but of the response to Prince's death?
Ronnie, being in the spending as many years as you did or are in the music industry, I feel like you must have a you probably have a unique perspective on this, because I feel like the thing that made Prince huge was not just his music, but how influential he was in the industry. So any interesting takes from that side of things?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Prince was obviously just, you know, a legend. I mean, you can't, you know, there's no disputing that or debating that, whether you loved him or hated him or were indifferent to him, which was me. That's the latter. I just was indifferent, was never influenced by him, never listened to any of his music. It just wasn't really my genre or my taste, and, you know, lacked a lot of melody for me, quite frankly. So people can start tweeting about that I just said that. But, yeah, I just think what I'm always really interested in, especially since we've had guys like David Bowie die in the last few months and then now Prince, is, you know, especially when you get these just massive legends, is I'm always curious about sort of this outpouring of grief from people, of which I always question just how tapped in and influenced they were by these individuals' music and artistry. And so I'm always just kind of shocked when I hear like sort of the typical outcry of grief. And I'm looking at these people, some of these people that I even know, going, I really don't think you were a Prince fan.
Like, so either you never even mentioned Prince. He's never been on the playlist in your car.
Yeah, and it's that kind of a thing. So I'm just always a little baffled by it. Not that people shouldn't pay their respects or, you know, acknowledge, you know, his status as a legendary artist and you know, massive influencer, but sort of this, like this grief that people sort of expend out there into the interwebs. And you just go, really, like, are you really that affected by an artist that at 30 years old, you probably weren't that influenced by him, you know?
And I feel like on top of that, or right alongside that, kind of part of the same thing is this, it's almost as if people, it's like grief one-upmanship.
Yes.
It's like, oh, you were heartbroken. Well, it shattered my life.
Right.
Except that neither of you have heard any songs besides Purple Rain, and you've never listened to it all the way through. So it is very strange to me. And David Prince, like, when Prince died, I was sad, but my perspective on it was, it was like a kind of a hometown legend, because if you're from Minnesota, you own your hometown superstars, because it's not a place like Los Angeles or something where, like, stars abound. And so people like Prince, you're like, oh, he's ours. And he still lived in Minnesota and all this stuff. So,
dude, so let me ask you this, man. Where was Prince for you in the pantheon of Minneapolis stars?
Well, like, growing up, he was sort of like a behind-the-scenes legend. Like, he was sort of a mystical figure. Like, he wasn't around town. It's not like in Nashville where you see country stars like at Starbucks. He wasn't that guy. But, like, he owned property, and you'd hear stories about how his altruism in the community and the community center that used to be his junior high was not that far from where I grew up and all this stuff. But when I was in high school, I started listening to his music a little bit, and I was always intrigued because I was like, this doesn't sound like anybody else. Like, it was avant-garde and artistic and weird and kind of cool, but I was never a massive fan. So for me, it was like, oh, it's like hearing that your favorite, an athlete or like the favorite hometown restaurant finally closed down or whatever. Like, oh, that's a part of my upbringing. It wasn't like, oh, he shaped my childhood. But like the weeping, the outpouring of grief, the lighting. Did they light the Eiffel Tower purple for this one? I feel like other places were. I don't know where it all went. But all of that stuff, I was just like, what? It's like we have to prove our grief by being louder about it than the last time. Like, oh, David Bowie got this much, but Prince was a bigger legend, so let's be that much more over the top about it, even though none of us have listened to any songs of his in the last – like, we forgot that was on our iPods. And I don't know. And the problem is I did hear a couple stories from people, like, online. I read articles where they were genuinely affected by Prince, either in a personal way or his music was very meaningful at a key time in their life. And all that stuff gets lost in the noise of, like, the purple filter on your Facebook photo and stuff like that.
Yeah, I just think it just becomes a way for people to be more self-promoting in some ways. And I know that sounds – maybe that's that's not being very generous right now, given that he just died last week. But so I don't mean it in any way like that, you know, just to be as PC as I can. I mean, look, man, I'm living in a purple world right now alongside everybody else. I walk outside, the sky's purple. I get in the shower, I turn on the water, it's coming out purple. Like everything's purple right now. So like, I get that, but it feels to me like because of the sort of the age that we're living in is everybody is using it as a way to make it about themselves. So
yeah.
when you go on like music sites and you got all these dudes that are doing covers of Prince songs, they're doing interviews, you know, Bono's talking about how Prince changed his life, and like everybody sort of uses it as a grab to almost really talk about themselves. And because we live in this sort of like media driven age, it's possible to do that. And then so on a lesser extent, you know, all of our friends and Twitter are acting like, oh my gosh, you know, the world has come to a close now because Prince has died. And so it's interesting times, you know what I mean? So it's like all these things when they happen, you know, especially when you look at the way when Bowie died, and I'm really surprised, and I'd like to get your take on this, Big T, because I felt like when David Bowie died, I thought, okay, besides like Michael Jackson, like this is it.
Yeah.
The world's just going to fall apart. David Bowie has died. And granted, you got all of that, but
Is that because of how big he was or because of how big the response was? Like when you say you thought the world was going to fall apart.
Well, I just thought because Bowie is like, I mean, to, you know, again, so we can sort of argue about who's, you know, who was bigger, more influential, Bowie, Prince, whatever, among these like legendary dudes. But I thought, man, the outpouring for Bowie, I just thought, oh my gosh, like this is never going to end. This is just going to go on and on and on. But you know, like everything else, it quickly came to a close. I feel like Prince is even more exaggerated than Bowie, you know, and I'm kind of surprised by that.
Of those three artists that you mentioned, though, Bowie, Prince, and Michael Jackson, I mean, we all grew up in the 80s and 90s. The only one of those artists that was really ever played by anybody was Michael Jackson. You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah, he was the pop star. The other guys were like industry influencers, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I consider myself fairly musically literate, and I have some David Bowie tracks that I like listening to. But yeah, as far as, you know, what would I listen to now if I had the opportunity to listen to, you know, any of those guys, it would hands down be Michael Jackson. And I think it would be that for most people. But here's the litmus test, boys. Did Al Mohler write a piece called How Are We to Think About Prince? I mean, did it get to that level of like, did this thing reach into?
I don't know. But if he did, he straight up Jesus juked in the first three sentences and said, not that prince, the prince of peace, and took it that direction. You know,
somebody did that though, right? Wasn't there? I feel like there had to be a Chico piece
on Prince or Bowie. There had to be some hipster somewhere who was like, you know what? I am going to speak wisdom into these musicians' lives.
Yeah, I haven't read anything.
Did that happen? So.
Well, I don't know. I haven't collected myself up in the puddle on the floor that I have been since the news broke on Twitter. So,
listen to me. Be strong, okay?
I need you to be strong for me, right?
The doves cried purple tears, and I collapsed into it and have yet to get up. So,
yeah, my thing is, I just can't think of one Prince song that I ever want to listen to. I mean, sorry the guy died and everything, but I have no affinity for the music whatsoever.
I have three of them on my iPhone, and it's the three that I've two that I've referenced, and then the Party Like It's 1999 song, just because I find that really kind of funny. Like it's a fun song, and it's like
it is.
Sometimes you just play it because it makes you laugh. But that's it. Like I don't know his other song, but I probably know more than I'm forgetting. But I mean, it's Doves Cry, Purple Rain, and the 1999 song, and that's it.
Prince was an influencer. I mean, one of you guys said that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he like Bowie, he was an influencer. If you collect it, I mean, this is a dude that released, you know, some years he would release multiple albums. He was massively prolific. He's probably the most prolific artist of the last like 30 or 40 years. Nobody released as much material as him. So when you just take it and you put it all in one big, you know, stack, I mean, he definitely was a guy that influenced more people towards becoming songwriters, becoming producers. Probably then you take his work as a collective whole as being something that is on everybody's, you know, iPod.
Let me ask you this. What's the most embarrassing song on your iPod?
I think I have some Shania Twain on there.
Nice, baby.
Like man, I feel like a woman. Except,
dude, you know what? I love that song.
It requires being embarrassed to have embarrassing music on there. I don't really feel embarrassed by that. But I think I have that one. I have what do I have on there? I'm sure I have a bunch of Taylor Swift because at one point I put a bunch of my kids' music on there and yeah. That made it on there. But I think the Shania Twain would probably rank as the most embarrassing.
Huh. I love it. Big R, I know you don't get embarrassed, and you're going to be very politic about this question because of your music industry connections. But do I even waste my breath on this question for you?
No, you don't. There's nothing I'm embarrassed about. I own everything I listen to. Yeah, it's all valid.
I know that, man. But it's all valid. Be embarrassed. Yeah, we've been over that ad nauseum. But
what would other people tell you should be embarrassed about?
There you go.
Yeah, they would probably say
like Point of Grace.
No, they'd probably say it's dumb that you listen to that one like Blink 182 song, Ronnie. But except for the fact that it's a fantastic pop song, so they're I'm back to that.
It's funny. A bunch of music that I would have thought was embarrassing in like 1998, when it's on the radio now, like anything by say like Rob Thomas.
Oh yeah,
I listen to it now and I'm like, it's kind of catchy. And which either means my taste sucks now, or I'm just a lot less self conscious about what I'm allowing myself to enjoy.
Or your taste was always bad, Piper.
Yeah, that's true. Or it's just a different version of terrible now.
Speaking of people who have bad taste, Pipe, this was a great suggestion by you, or maybe it was by a listener. I don't know. But the question is this. So given all these movements and all these kind of pockets of celebrity, I guess, that we've been discussing over the last few weeks – the question is, why are followers crazier than leaders? So one example being, and I'm not speaking to the craziness of any of these people. This is just one that came to mind. Douglas Wilson, who may or may not have a bit of a reputation in that space.
He may.
And his followers, who I think are definitely at times crazy people, and they seem to be even crazier than he is. So why is this? Why this phenomenon where you take a thing that may not be in and of itself that crazy, but yet the people that follow it end up being sort of rabid about it. And their zeal definitely eclipses their zeal for things that maybe should matter, like the gospel.
I think it's because you get people who are looking for an identity, and they're sort of insecure people, or they're kind of trying to latch on to something, and they find these. It's usually pretty clear, outspoken people. Like, it's hard to find crazy followers of Tim Keller, for example, because right. He's so balanced.
Yeah.
But if you get somebody even like my dad, who says pretty pointed things about whether it's theology or culture or whatever, people who are looking to latch onto these, and so they're already kind of fragile follower types. And I don't necessarily mean that as an insult, but it probably kind of comes off that way, and I'm okay with that. And they latch onto the extremity of what these guys say, and maybe the leader has thought through it and is thinking in terms of nuance and balance and things like that, and all they hear is the most extreme version, and they're like, oh, I own that, and they just define themselves by it. And so what was maybe a little bit nuanced or well thought through, like, all the nuance is left behind, and all you get is the blunt edge. And then that's what they define themselves by, and so they just become like these shrill, angry, they're still as insecure as ever, but they just cloak themselves in John Piper said this or Doug Wilson said this or whatever, and then you end up they just end up crazy. It was the same thing with Driscoll. It's the same thing with Donald Trump, and they're always crazier than the person on stage, which is saying something when it's Donald Trump.
Big R, let me ask you this, man. Have you ever, even for the shortest amount of time, in YouTube Pipe, have you ever followed anyone with that level of zeal or any cause or any sort of subculture?
I don't think to that degree. I mean, I've been a fanboy here and there, but it's always been very short-lived, and I always eventually just sort of fall back into whatever the content is more so than the person. So that's just been my default. And granted, I could go too far into the content, but I don't find myself, I don't really have the kind of personality that just is, sort of bowing at the feet of the person, defends the person, loves the person, posters of the person. I just, it's never just really been in my nature. to do that, you know, really too much. So,
Pipe, what about you, man? Even like a Minnesota athlete.
Well, I think athletes are a little different because they're not really putting out content. So, like, yeah, I was, and would still be if he was alive, a massive Kirby Puckett fan and Kevin Garnett fan or whatever. But like, there's very little harm in that. Yeah. I mean, I guess that would be the case where, like, if somebody was like, no, Tim Duncan's better than Kevin Garnett, if I was to drop the gloves and just fight with him, I guess that's kind of the same thing. But yeah. No, I think when it comes to, like, the thought and the worldview kind of thing, there was a stretch, like, say, from freshman year in college until my early 20s, so 4 or 5 years there, with a dissipating level where I was sort of the angry cage stage Calvinist. Because yeah. I came out of it, and then I got to college and ran across a whole bunch of like Wesleyans and Methodists and people who didn't agree with me. I was outside my theological bubble, and I became the Calvinist warrior.
You mean those people go to Wheaton?
Yeah, shocker.
And what did that look like, Pipe?
That's interesting. You, like, flesh that out. Yeah.
Was that you like shutting people down in like small groups or more online or what was the
goodness? Well, let me just start by saying this. If I knew you in college, yeah. I just apologize for me. I apologize for my mouth and my attitude. If I went back and met myself, I wouldn't like me at 18 to say 22 or 23. So,
Piper, none of us would. You right. realize that's a common theme right here.
Yeah,
right
absolutely. Yeah. Like I understand most people have a lot of things to grow out of, but it was. I mean, it's you know, it's like the late night dorm room arguments and the kind of statements like. Well, I'm not a Calvinist. I'm a Paulinist, and that kind of stuff. Where you associate yourself with the Bible because clearly, how can an Arminian read the Bible and believe the same thing they do? That sort of attitude, arguing with professors in classes. I went to a church that was pretty reformed, so I didn't get a lot of it there. But in those circles, it was more like talking amongst ourselves about those weird semi-Pelagians over there and that kind of thing. Like, I'm annoying myself just talking about this. I want to smack my own mouth. but so for me, it was attaching myself to a camp because I hadn't kind of learned to sort through, don't be a jerk, and B, how to be a little bit more even-handed and level-headed about theology and how you communicated and things like that. And so, and that's why I say a lot of it is identity, because to be level and sort of be able to float between things and understand two different sides of things requires a pretty strong sense of confidence in who you are and what you believe and the things that you are anchored in. Like you mentioned earlier, Ted, the gospel, for example. And so you anchor in these peripheral things because they're a little bit more tangible and visible and easily defined. And so you're like, no free will or whatever. And you try to – you kind of blanket yourself in that stupid identity and become a jerk about it. And I think sometimes the leaders – and you know, going back to the original question, sometimes the leaders are crazy. And crazy leaders have that like the craziest of followers.
Right.
Donald Trump,
right.
for example. But moderately crazy leaders or very outspoken leaders still have crazy followers because the followers are not intelligent enough and haven't gone through the same thought process that the leader has. They just grab a phrase or a concept and misconstrue it and define themselves by it. And I would bet that a lot of these leaders are like, you guys need to ease up. Like, you guys are worse. You know, that's not what I meant when I said that thing, and yet you have decided to bludgeon people with it.
Right, right.
Like I'm sure John Calvin would not be pleased with what a lot of the people who claim his name are like now.
Yeah, including people that claim his name at all, that we took his doctrine and put his name on it. Yeah, I'm sure he wouldn't be thrilled with the stamp that he gets put on this doctrine. But
at the risk of Jesus juking, I'm fairly certain Jesus feels the same way about people who claim his name too.
Wow. Boy, yeah. We just jumped the shark a little bit, Big T, with that one, didn't we?
Dude,
Come on, if you can't get a Jesus juke into this podcast, what are we doing here?
Yeah,
I love it. I love it. Boys, I feel like that's a natural segue into our final segment, which is an invention of B-Pipe. I feel like this episode is kind of showcasing Pipe, which I'm fine with completely.
Ditto.
But this concept is called unpopular opinions. So The idea here is that we each just share one unpopular opinion. Sometimes there's a category like food or movies or whatever. Other times, like today, it's just kind of a freestyle. So, Big R, let's start with you. Let's hear one unpopular opinion.
I don't know. Like, give me a minute to think. I feel like I already stated all my unpopular opinions on the Prince segment. You know what I mean?
Okay, well, your goal here is to state it as a black and white statement so that there is no room for agreement with you. That's really,
right, just
that's
in a,
really
just in an entertainment sense. Yes. Yeah, so.
This is Skip Bayless and Stephen A. Smith just talking nonsense. Ted, did you hear that that Skip is leaving ESPN?
Really?
Yeah.
Why? I mean, that's great news, but why?
I'm sure his contract is up, and they decided that we don't want to blow hard on our show anymore.
Yeah,
that's kind of the nature of the show. Apparently, yeah, Fox Sports is about to pay him $4 million a year to go do his shtick there.
God, dude, and that shtick to me is just so bad, so bad.
That is not an unpopular opinion.
No, it isn't. That's an opinion that everyone will agree with.
That's right.
Don't you agree though that media needs Baylesses? You know what I'm saying? Like, I think
Fox doesn't. They have all the Baylesses. They're just on the political side.
They're collecting Baylesses, unfortunately.
Ronnie, have you come up with an unpopular opinion yet?
No, I'd actually, unless the whole program's dominated by Big T, I would like you to come up with the first one. Let's do that. How about you?
Dude, I have one, actually.
Throw it out there.
Yes.
Throw it.
My unpopular opinion is that, and this is going to kill me in the South. I don't like earnest people. You know what I mean?
Give an example.
Yeah,
give a real.
I've got examples galore. Actually, I love where I work. No doubt about it. I just am beyond blessed to be here. But I spend a lot of time.
Sounds like an
walking.
Earnest statement. Can we take you seriously?
It is an earnest statement. But I spend a lot of time walking around campus, right, between buildings, and college is a time of sort of trying on identities and figuring out who you are. And there are a couple of couples that are just so kind of steeped in earnestness, i.e. there's no sort of insidery jokes. There's no even like kind of ironic head nod. I mean, they're so earnest that they seem to float from building to building. You know what I'm saying? And I don't know if this style thing has gotten to Nashville or not, but there's sort of a like an old lady dress thing going on down here where – you just wear like a smock that like your grandmother would have worn.
Like a Little House on the Prairie dress?
Like a Little House on the Prairie smock. And if you're super earnest and spiritual and sort of dialed into things, you wear it without shoes, right? And you just sort of, you walk around a little bit stoop-shouldered and ethereal, kind of just gazing into the distance.
Is that like a hippie thing or like all of this ground is holy ground thing?
Dude, I think it's that. I think it's like an earnest Christian hippie thing.
Oh, so it's not like a twee like indie rock chick like trying to look like that. That's not what you're saying.
No, it's like an earnest, Christian like thoughtfulness thing. And dude, I know we share the bond in Christ, but I don't know what to say to these people,
When you say earnest,
I mean very serious. I mean
like people that take themselves too seriously. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, people who take themselves very seriously. People who don't have a gear socially for like
sarcasm,
good natured chop busting, or sarcasm, right, or laughter,
or even like raised voices,
or even raised voices, or even like a funny observation. You know what I mean?
I would say they would hate this podcast. It's that kind of people.
They would hate it. Yeah, they would never listen to this. So I know it's not even a danger. But
it's kind of like that whole thing. Yeah, and this kind of segues into maybe what could be mine, which is let me just kind of hit off that a little bit, or let me echo that, to use a Christian phrase.
You echo that echo.
That's been popular for the last 1900 years it's this idea of people that take what they do so seriously, like their vocation. You know what I mean? So in my line of work, like you see that a lot. So in other words, these are dudes that will joke about certain things in certain areas of life. But when you try to bring it back to like what it is exactly they do, it's just straight face. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like they take themselves and what they do so seriously. And I'm just, you look at them and you go, really? Like you can't let the guard down even for what, it's sort of like that artistic sort of attitude about everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Ooh, oh, yeah.
Artists.
Yeah, it's the artists are the worst. Well, artists and, are the
worst. They kind of are.
It's in those two groups have real similar personas because there is sort of that sense of they are above the triviality of humor and and fun. And
dude, like, yeah, they see humor as just the most frivolous, like selfish thing imaginable.
But the group that Ronnie's talking about is sort of like peer down their nose at that crowd. Like it's straight up smugness if I'm picturing it correctly. The other group, the earnest crowd, I feel like it's more like a
dude, they're really nice. They're really amazing people. Right, I just have nothing to say to them.
They give you like this little half smile, like, aw, kind of thing. Yeah. Like they feel sorry for how trite your life is.
Yeah.
That's the vibe that that I picture from that crowd. And it's actually making my blood boil just a little bit because I have run-ins with them as well.
Yeah, totally. And again, like I don't – there's nothing to hate about these people, right, because they're so good. It's just I just have nothing to say to them, you know?
Yeah, they and the first words out of your mouth always fall flat. I mean, it's just lead
balloon. Oh, dude, yes, they're always horribly awkward. And this is a thing that especially men in that genre will do. They'll do the thing, and again, I get this on campus because I'm going in and out of buildings all the time, but they'll hold the door for you. They'll hold the door open for you even if you're 3 miles away, you know? And it's like, dude, just keep going. I don't need that. You know, I'm a big guy. I got this. You know,
yeah, and yeah. I mean, what's okay to completely change the subject? What's the proper distance that somebody needs to be behind you? Like within which it's right to hold the door. Like how many steps?
This is great. Yeah. We need to suss this out.
I would say no longer than 5 feet.
Than
5 feet. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you clearly live in the north because I would say it's more like 5 steps.
Well, okay, maybe that's 5 feet.
You a very short person walking behind you.
Tiny little mincing steps.
That's right. What are they, tap dancing?
Intentional little steps.
I mean, yeah. I'm 5'9", Piper. I guess I'm just speaking from experience. You know, I don't know what to say about that.
They're tap dancing. And Fred Astaire is behind you, 5 steps.
I also feel like it's
singing in the rain.
The distance gets longer if you have made eye contact with them. You know, you glance over your shoulder to see if someone's there and they say they're like 12 steps behind you. But if you make eye contact, you have to hold the door. Otherwise, you are conscientiously choosing to be a jerk.
Hey, dude, guys, you know what I do in that situation? I just kind of – I do the thing where I push the door open like real wide and then I just let it sort
just
of –
just let it swing.
Swing, yeah.
And they can hustle if they want.
They can hustle if they want, man, you know? Or
we
not.
We need to do an entire podcast on etiquette and different aspects of etiquette.
We absolutely do.
Because I'm sure we're all masters of etiquette.
Well, I'll tell you what. In fact, let's get some listeners' ideas for this too. Like send in some of your etiquette pet peeves and we'll do an entire podcast about that.
So you can send those to happyrantpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up at happyrantpod on Twitter or find us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page which is called Happy Rant Podcast. And we want etiquette pet peeves.
Etiquette pet peeves, subtitle, how the gospel changes how we move and think. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, and we'll call that the Mr. Manners episode or something
there you
like
go.
That.
I love it.
I have a pair of unpopular opinions, but they're very closely related because they both have to do with regional foods.
Oh, all right, man.
The first is that Chicago-style deep-dish pizza is not pizza. It's cheese casserole.
Oh.
The second is that In-N-Out Burger ranks just barely above McDonald's on the quality scale.
Wow. Dude, but people are like rabid about it, man. People are devoted to it.
I expect people to tar and feather me for the In-N-Out one. The Chicago style one, like that's an active debate, the New York style versus Chicago style pizza. My point is that it's not pizza at all. Like if you can't pick it up and eat it with your hands, it's not pizza. It's cheese casserole.
Yeah, you're right, man. It's a whole different genre of Italian food at that point.
But okay, so about 2 years ago, I was out in California on a business trip and I'd heard from everybody who grew up out there that In-N-Out Burger is the best. And you know, and I knew all like they'd given me the go up and order this. It's not on the menu. It's one of their secret menu items. And so like, I knew what I was supposed to order. And I ordered it and I was like, this is a Big Mac without the bread in the middle.
Yeah.
And I drove out of my way for this. Now, granted, it's California, so you don't have to go that far out of the way because they're everywhere. It's kind of like White Castles in Tennessee. But I was unimpressed.
You know what else along those lines related to our geography, Pipe, is Chick-fil-A, man. I'm not a Chick-fil-A guy. I just think the hype is it's okay. I mean, I'll eat it, but I don't think the hype is the quality is commensurate with the hype.
I think the hype of Chick-fil-A has more to do with people feel sanctified when they go to Chick-fil-A. And so it's like fast food without the guilt.
Yeah, but I know a lot of like unsanctified people that like love
I love Chick-fil-A, but I get what Ted's saying. Like it's you don't bite into it and immediately go, This is the best chicken sandwich I've ever had. You go, this is a good chicken sandwich.
You go in there between 11 and 2 and you gotta wade through like 83 homeschool kids and their moms. It's like a reformed church lobby on a Sunday morning.
All right, Ted, here's how you improve your Chick-fil-A experience.
Yeah.
Say thank you as many times as you can to employees and see what your record can get to how many times you can get them to say my pleasure.
Okay.
It's like a little party game at Chick-fil-A. Just how many times can you get them to say my pleasure? Because you have to find something to do to overcome all the kids who are running around screaming in the play place because their moms are bringing them to eat Christian chicken.
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
Man. Wow.
You know what, Pipe? I'm a big Popeyes guy. Do you ever eat Popeyes?
Wow.
I do like Popeyes. I don't know if I would say it's better than Chick-fil-A, but it's definitely underrated on the fast food chicken scale.
I agree, man.
Bojangles, wow. Bojangles chicken biscuit, also excellent.
Ooh. Nice.
Wow.
You can try that one out. Do they have Bojangles up your way, Ronnie?
I've seen them, but I haven't eaten at one.
Yeah, I haven't. Yeah, I can't recall.
They're usually disgusting places. Like Bojangles is usually a dive. They just opened one near us, and within 3 weeks, it was already like a gas station bathroom. But but the chicken biscuit is phenomenal.
Big R, have you come up with an unpopular opinion yet?
You know, gosh, I haven't. I'm just not that creative today.
Big R, I love this.
You know,
Pipe, here's a little project, man. You and me for the next 2 to 3 minutes are going to come up with what we think Big R's unpopular opinions would be.
True, because here's the thing. He's got 9 of them in his head right now, and he's afraid.
He's not going to do
he's
it.
He's afraid to say them because
he's too savvy.
He does not want to.
Cagey.
Yes, afraid is the wrong word. He is. Yeah. He's being selective about saying them for the sake of not offending somebody.
Dude, he's always taking the long view, you know?
Dude, you know what? I mean, let me just be honest, fellas. I mean, if I would have there was a lot on the line for me to even, like, be in the same room as you guys after
dude,
that.
There's so much on the line.
I mean, after that In-N-Out Burger comment and me being an ex-Californian, there's a lot there. I don't want a guy to be in a plane flying out here right now after he stops off in Nashville to strangle Pipe to come my way and then finish me off.
I was really hoping that you, as a former Californian, and maybe you still consider yourself a Californian because if you're born and raised in a place, it sticks with you, that you would have actually like given me some pushback, and all you gave me was, wow.
Okay, do you want to hear my opinion on that, Pipe? You want to keep talking about it, or you want to hear my opinion?
I want to hear your opinion.
Okay, so here's the deal. Now, I am a really unpopular guy because, man, I've just never drank the In-N-Out Kool-Aid or the burgers for that matter. I mean, so I what I like to tell people is I actually believe, and this is literally, they're like, somebody's like steering like, you know, cruise missiles at my office right now. But I actually believe that Five Guys is a better burger than In-N-Out.
Second the motion. Bill is passed. Totally agree with you.
I mean, it's just a way better burger. And again, if there's an In-N-Out right in front of me, I mean, I'm going to go. I'm going to get a double-double. I'm going to enjoy every minute of it. No complaints. But if there's a Five Guys and an In-N-Out, I mean, I hate to say this, but I'm going to go to Five Guys. I'm going to go there.
No, I couldn't agree more. Five Guys is great. It's like my favorite casual burger out there.
Is In-N-Out in the same, like, price strata as Five Guys, though? Because I totally agree on Five Guys quality, but you're paying like $22 for a burger and a little basket of peanuts, right, man?
Yeah, no. So In-N-Out is In-N-Out, I think, is cheaper, and but the menu's similar in that it's just burgers and fries, so it's limited menu.
Yeah.
But yeah, In-N-Out, In-N-Out is just legendary status, and it has, and you guys got to understand too that it has kind of a little bit of a Chick-fil-A push to it because the owner is a believer, and they print scripture verses on the bottoms of the cups, and so they only franchise out to family members, so it is a Christian. you know, quote unquote organization in that sense. And so there's also a lot of heart from the church to In and Out in Southern California.
If they were real Christians, they would print the verses where people could actually read them.
Dude, if they're really real Christians, they'd be closed on Sunday like Chick-fil-A.
That's right. Amen. I have an unpopular opinion for Ronnie. I've never heard him say anything remotely close to this because I think he's been coy about it. I think Ronnie really likes kale.
Wow.
I think that's Ronnie's unpopular opinion.
I'm stunned, man. I'm stunned, but not stunned. You know what I mean?
I'm stunned by how little you know me, Piper. I'm stunned.
or am I just messing with you? That's the other question.
You know, man, I'm with you guys on the kale hype. I just don't really do it. So no, that wouldn't be one of my unpopular opinions. I wouldn't be that dogmatically positive about kale. You know, and you know what else I don't like? I can't say that. That's going to get me in too much trouble. Carry on,
boys. Dude, you can't say it because you almost had an opinion.
Better say it.
We almost goaded you into playing the game.
No, I almost said something so bad that I'm thinking of four people listening to this podcast that I would have gotten in brutal trouble with.
Does it have to
do with
yoga or CrossFit, perhaps?
I mean, you know, you could add that into CrossFit, it if you wanted Judas. To, you know? Yeah.
I have a question. Ted, where did you come up with Judas? And actually, I think I've heard both of you say this as your non-offensive expletive of choice.
Yeah, you know what?
I think it's great. I'm just curious.
It's old school.
I haven't heard a lot of people say it, but there was a guy in my high school. He was a senior when I was a freshman, and he lived in my neighborhood. And he said it all the time. He said Judas Priest, you know. And there was this band? There was this band in the 80s called Judas Priest, and I always thought it was super funny. And I started saying it way back then, and it's always stuck with me. It's like an old friend, you know.
It's actually an old school phrase. I mean, obviously as old school as Judas Priest is old, but I think, and again, I don't know where the connotations lie with people saying, you know, Jesus Christ. And so some people, it's almost like sort of a bedfellow with that sort of slang, you know, just saying Judas Priest, but it is kind of an old phrase. Like I've heard it on movies and things like that.
It's okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Nice.
So there you go.
I like it. I will have to see if it fits. You know, some words just roll off the tongue and some don't. I'm gonna have to give that one a try and see how it tastes. But you know what?
Piper,
always makes me laugh.
I mean, Ted and I have just shortened it to Judas.
I know. Yeah, it's great. But sometimes
we shorten everything.
But sometimes sometimes you need the full version. You know, all three syllables, and sometimes you want the short version because that's how expletives work.
Well, guys, check it out. Like, if you checked all my texts, there's at least like four or five people where if you scrolled up and down, you would see the word like Judas as a reply like eight different times. You know what I mean?
I've seen it in text messages.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Regarding this, man, regarding Judas Priest, what's the over under on number of earnest rebukes that we're going to get about using the phrase Judas Priest? Because you know it's going to happen.
I would venture to guess that here's what's going to happen. You and I will hear nothing on this, Ted, and Ronnie will have three people who talk to him in person who tell him that he shouldn't do this. Yeah, people don't waste their time with us. Ronnie apparently gives off the good listener vibe or the
open to counsel vibe. Hope for him vibe. You know?
Well, guys, that's because I raised my celebrity to C- last week. That's why. You guys were D+. I bumped up to C-.
You christened yourself a C- reformed celebrity.
You know what, man? I don't want anybody christening me, you know, D+. If I'm going to get christened, I'll christen myself and I'll bump myself up half step. C-.
Baby, that really it didn't sit well with you, did it? It's stuck in your craw, as it were.
Actually, I'm still cracking up that, like, instead of just saying D-list, Piper goes D+ list.
Dude, he gave
like,
us the D+. He bumped us
just,
up.
Yeah, he couldn't settle onto the ground floor.
No.
You know what we did?
Yeah, some modicum of ego still exists.
We went to the optional thing in the evening, and we signed the thing, and we got a little extra credit, and it bumped us up to a D.
That's right.
So stupid.
Judas Priest.
Yes.
All right, boys.
Well, let's end this. Let's end this while we're ahead.
Or now.
We have wandered to and fro, as we always do on this program. And until next time, Judas Priest, Rachel LaHeld Evans.
Everyone wants to change the world. Capital Ministries is doing just that, one heart at a time, by creating disciples of Jesus Christ among political leaders in the U.S. and foreign nations. For more than 25 years, founder Ralph Drollinger has written Bible studies specifically for public servants. Study along with us and learn what the Bible says about capitalism, communism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and other contemporary issues. Subscribe and follow us at lifeaudio.com or search Capital Ministries on your favorite podcast platform.